Parshas Chukas, everyone. I'm going to read the pasuk. It's toward the end of the parsha in Parshas Chukas. Parak Chaf Aleph Pasuk Yud Dalet. Pasuk says, "Al Kain Yeomer B'Sefer Melchamos Hashem." Therefore, it was said over in the book of the wars of God. Es Vahev B'Sufa V'Senecholim are known. Now, there's no good way to translate these words. I'm going to translate it the way that the Living Torah, Rav Aryeh Kaplan, translates it. He says, as an outermost boundary, I have given you the streams of the Arnon. I have given you that as your borders. Your borders go all the way to the river of Arnon. That's how far it goes back there. Now, our question is going to be the following. It's going to be all about this pasuk and try to figure out what's going on. The first thing is like this. What is the Book of Wars? Where is this Sefer Melchamos Hashem that the Torah is quoting? We're not just talking about Stam, a book. This is a book that the Torah is quoting as if it's a chashuv book. Everybody should read this. It's the Book of the Wars of God. What is this exactly? The Chizkuni, Balei Tosos, Sforno, Ramban, and the Rabbeinu Bachaya say this is an ancient, lost book. Meaning, back in the day, there were people that wrote down all the different things that had happened, all the wars and whatever it was. They called themselves Moshlim, the people that told over parables and riddles for everybody to understand them better. And those wars that they saw to be miraculous were dubbed the Wars of God. The wars that didn't make any sense at all. How in the world could this nation have just defeated the other nation? Whenever they saw something like that, they called it the Wars of God themselves. Not all of them were fought by Jews. Some of them were fought by the non-Jews as well. It could have been Sihon. It could have been some of the other wars that are around there. And in fact, one of those wars was the war of Sihon against Moab, which we're going to speak about below. It was just a book filled with wars that people would go through. The Abarbanel says this was passed down through the other nations and may have even been written by a non-Jew. Meaning this didn't have to be a Jewish book. This could have been a non-Jewish book that the Torah quotes over here. And the Sefer Yash says in Parshat B'Shalach, it was Moshe Rabbeinu that wrote it down. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote another book, and that book was called Sefer Melchamos Hashem. The Ibn Ezra argues a little bit. He said this book was written in the times of Avram Avinu, and it continued throughout the Torah. People added to it all the time. It was an original book by Avram Avinu's time, and whoever wrote it, and then as time went on, people kept adding and adding and adding to it. He said there are many svarim just like this. He said the Mishalim and all the songs of Shlomo Melech, which there were thousands of, we've lost all of those books, we have no idea. There was a book of Nasan HaNavi, who was the Navi in the times of David Melech. We don't know where that is. We have a book of the Gad Achoze. We have another book that's mentioned by Ido HaNavi that was written in the times of Rechavam. We have no idea where that book is. We have all these Sfarim that were written by the Nevi'im or other very, very wise people that we lost completely, and this is another example of that. Chizkuni gives the other example, Divrei Hayamim of the Malchei Yisrael. We have the Divrei Hayamim of Malchei Yehuda. That's Divrei Hayamim Aleph and Beis. But we're missing the Divrei Hayamim of the Malchei Yisrael. We're missing all of those. When we went into Golos, at some point, all these books were lost, and it looks like we're never going to get them back again. We have no idea where they are and where they're going to be or what's happened with them. Rav Hirsch says, according to both of these opinions, it shows that there were people writing Sfarim down at the time. Maybe they were crude. Maybe they weren't like our books today, especially not bound the way that we have it today. But nonetheless, there were things that happened either for the benefit of the people at the time or for the future, for them to see in the future itself. And these books, he says, Rav Hirsch says, are likely like ballads or midrashim that they were trying to go through to poetry, right? Going through all the things that the great people did so that everybody would know one thing after the other. But it's unique, says Rav Hirsch. How many Sfarim are quoted by the Torah as if there's something important over here? The Torah not only tells us that it existed, it's important to look through to see what was going on in the time, and we even quote it. The Torah is quoting from another book, telling you what's going on at the time, which is absolutely amazing. Targum Yonason says there's no way that we're quoting. Yeah? We don't see any other time where there's something exactly like this. Sefer HaYashar, right? But we don't see an exact quote like this. This, I don't believe we see anywhere. The Targum Yonason says it refers to the Sefer Torah itself. This is not referring to anything but the Sefer Torah itself that we have today. And there are Midrashim, says Targum Yonason, that say it's only referring to Sefer Devarim. That Sefer Devarim was known as the Book of the Wars of God. Moshe Zakenim, Rokeach, Rabbeinu Ephraim, Rabbeinu Yehuda Chosid all say that it's referring to Sefer Devarim because it goes through all the wars that they went through. Midrash Haggadah says it's Sefer Shmos, because it goes through the Amaleki War, the Egyptian War with the Jews, and etc. Reb Chaim Paltiel and Maral Diskin say the same. But either way, this opinion of Targum Yonason in all these different Rishonim is saying that it's a Jewish book, specifically a Jewish book, not a book of wars, not a book of wars that could have been written by non-Jews, but a specific Jewish book, and it's the Sefer Torah itself, according to many of these Rishonim. The actual Sefer Torah is known as the Sefer Melchamos Hashem. That's what it refers to. Rashi, Rashbam, Rabbeinu Bachaya say it's not referring to an actual book. It's referring to the telling over of what God did for us when we were in the desert. The way to read this pasuk is not as in, therefore I have, it was said in the book of the wars of God. Don't read it that way. Instead, the way I want you to read it is written in this book information about God's wars. They told over all these things about God's war. It's like the Sefer that's written in Perkei Avos, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Aleph. We say that all of your deeds are written down in a Sefer. It's not true. I mean, in Shemayim, there's no Sefer. There's no book that's out there that does all these things. Instead, what it means is that it's told over to other people. It's as if it's written in a Sefer. That's what we're referring to over here. That's what he says. Now, it could be, and I'm not positive about this, but it could be there was a custom back then. The same way we have a Haggadah, and in the Haggadah, we go through, we tell over the story of what happened to the Jews in the times when they left Mitzrayim. It could be they had a minhag to tell over the wars that they went through and to say it over to other people. They had a specific designated time that they talked about the war against Amalek or the war against Sihon and Og. And that was called the Sefer Melchamos Hashem. There could have even been a date that we don't know anymore, but a specific date where they went over the story of what happened when they fought against these nations. You should know the Rokeach says one of the reasons why we have Sukkos, the purpose of the Chag of Sukkos itself, is not because of the Anani HaKavod, and it's not because of the Sukkos Mamish that they had. It's because they fought against Sihon and Og during this time. And during that time when they fought against Sihon and Og, they fought in different areas one after the other. They were shown miracle after miracle after miracle. They were protected from the different blisteros, the missiles that Og was sending against them, that Sihon was throwing against them. And because they were protected, they spoke over, they had a Chag of Sukkos commemorating the winning of that war. And they spoke over all the great things that happened in the war on Sukkos. We forgot about this. It's no longer in our repertoire. We have no clue that even Sukkos is for the wars against Sihon and Og. Nobody knows that. The Rokeach mentions it, but nobody mentions it by anywhere else. It's not in the Gemara. It's not in the Shulchan Aruch. Nobody mentions such a thing. But can you imagine? Pesach was the night that they went over Yitzias Mitzrayim. And Sukkos was the Chag when they went over their wars in the Midbar. That's what they told over. And that was the Sefer Melchamos Hashem that they went through one after the other. It's really an amazing thing. I haven't seen anybody that says it. It just seems that that's the idea that everybody's mentioning over here. That Yelis HaShachar says, it's amazing that we don't know about this. Why in the world do we know nothing about this Sefer Melchamos Hashem? We don't know anything about these wars. We know they fought Sihon. We know they fought Og. We have one story of Moshe Rabbeinu jumping those 10 amos and hitting Og right in the ankle. But nothing else. Why are we missing all of this information? There's no answer, but unfortunately it's there. Now let's get to a next part of this pasuk over here. The word esvahev bisufa. First, let's deal with the word bisufa. What does the word bisufa mean? There are five different ways to understand it. Our first way is the chiskuni and the malvim. It is an outermost boundary. Bisufa, at the end of the boundaries, this is how far the land of Eretz Yisrael goes. That's the first explanation. Bali Tosis and Abarbanel say sufa is a whirlwind, a massive storm. Now listen to this pshat, it's the craziest pshat. The Bala Turim says that war never goes this quickly as it did for the Jews over here. Typically speaking, a battle takes a long time. Wars take a long time. And then by the time you're able to settle everything down, take the spoils, grab the people from the war, etc., do whatever you need to do, this takes years. It takes years to do this. It's not like you can walk into a city, they all go down, and then all of a sudden you can take everything out and you're out within 5 days. But this happened like a whirlwind. When they fought against Sihon and Og, it was all within 1 year. All by Elul and Tishrei. That's when they fought against Sihon and Og. Elul and Tishrei. And it happened just like that. You couldn't believe it. You were sitting there, you were watching everything happen, and then all of a sudden it was over. And they were just like, we have all his spoils now, what do we do? It didn't make any sense. Everything was completely done, and they were standing there shocked, saying, what in the world happened over here? They could not understand how quickly it happened, and therefore the word bisufa means it was like a whirlwind. It's like it just happened just like that. The Ramban says it could be that Sihon and Moab fought in the middle of a storm. That there was a massive storm, and the reason why Sihon was able to defeat the mighty nation of Moab was because there was a massive storm, it was crazy, and people were shocked that Sihon had won the war against Moab. Maybe the storms have something to do with it, maybe the land had something to do with it, but they saw God's hand in it, and they called it the Sefer Melchamot Shem, Bisufa, the war that happened in the storm. Obviously, it doesn't make any sense for people to fight in the middle of a storm. People normally do not fight in the storm itself. But nonetheless, that's what they did over here. The Ralbag says it means Bisufa comes from the word Yam Suf. Why was the Yam Suf called the Yam Suf? It was the sea of what?
Reeds.
The reeds. So he says Bisufa is the reeds. The Ralbag says that the Sofa, the end of the border of Klal Yisrael, goes all the way to the Yam Suf. Which means, by the way, that although biblical Israel really stops at around the Negev, and that's how much they conquered, what we should be able to take over is all the way to the Yam Suf. And that, by the way, would include the entire Sinai Peninsula. Because the Yam Suf is not really the Gulf of Suez and the Gulf of Aqaba that goes up to Eilat and on the other side of the Sinai Peninsula. It really goes all the way down. That we'd include that entire area, that it all belongs to Eretz Yisrael, and that we own all of it. It would all be included with this over here. Says the Baal HaTurim, it's the exact same thing. He says it could be that they went all the way down to the Yam Suf and that they're praising what happened back then at the Yam Suf, reminding themselves of it, of what was happening to them right over here itself. Targum Onkelos translates it seemingly that way. They talked over about the wars of God, not only here in Nachal Arnon where they fought against Sihon and Og, but also what happened back at the Yam Suf. So Esvayi B'Sufa refers to what happened at the Suf itself, right over there in that area. There's a Maral Diskin over here as well, but that's that. There's a Medrash Agado that says Sufa is an actual place, a place that's located by the Arnon River itself. But the Rashbam says, in number 5, it's the end of a certain time. It's not referring to a place at all. Bnei Yisrael had to go around a certain area, and it was miraculous that they were able to get around. Had they not seen this place, they never would have gotten to the rock that gave them water, etc. It was a tremendous miracle that they were in this direction. They were going in that direction, and that's that. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says the whole thing is a nevuah for the Sof, for the future. Then in the future, at the end of days when Mashiach comes, we're going to be Zocha to take over all of the lands that Avraham was promised. The Cani, the Kenizi, and the Kadmoni. Moab, Ammon, and Edom. And the whole area surrounding Eretz Yisrael, which would include the south, the east, and the far east, will all belong to Eretz Yisrael. It's all going to be given to us. And that's what it means. Es Yohev, it will be given Bisufa. At the very, very end. That was the gift that we're going to have over here. That's Bisufa. What about Vahev? There's 4 different explanations. The Radak, the Das Zakenim, the Chizkuni say, Es Yohev is one big word, Is Yohev, to be given. They were given a tremendous gift. It's as if the nations were given over into the hands of those who defeated them. That they didn't do anything at all, that God allowed them to win, and it was an easy win in many, many different ways. That was one explanation that went through over here. Rabbeinu Ephraim says, if you switch around the words Es Vohev, it comes out to the word Ha'avos. Ha'avos, as in, they were in charge, and the Avos HaKadoshim, those Avos gave us the skus to be able to win all of our wars. The Rokeach talks about this as well, but Es Yohev are the actual letters of Es of Ha'avos. That would be the idea behind it. Obviously, the Yud would have to be translated into above, but that's the idea behind it, the Is Yohev or Is Vohav, right? However you want to put it over there. Rav Sadia Gaon says there was a pool in the desert, and it didn't make any sense. When they fought against Sihon and Og, there was a downpour. Now remember, they fought against Sihon and Og in Elul and Tishrei. Not a typical time for rain in Eretz Yisrael. But when they fought against Sihon and Og, for some reason, there was a massive downpour, a massive storm that happened, and it formed a river that Sihon's army could not get through. And because Sihon's army couldn't get through it, therefore the Jews were not having, there was no surprise attack. They weren't worried about anything coming, and thank God everything worked out. That was the idea of what it means by Es Yohev. There was a pool there that they weren't able to get through, and that's the idea behind it. Almost like the Yohev Bisufa would be like it was a pool that caused a storm to happen that allowed everything to happen over here. There's a Medrash Agadol over here as well, a Ksav HaKabbalah that goes through the different places, right, of what they're referring to. And finally, Rashi says it just means that there was a gift given to them, and that's what Yohev means, similar to the tremendous miracles that happen up above. Okay, but there's something more to this. Because the Gemara goes into a special medrash. Es Yohev is not referring to being given or a place or anything like that. The Gemara in Brachos, and Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph on the bottom, leading up to Amud Beis, says the following Medrash, and it's also in the Medrash Tanchuma with a little bit of a difference. Here's what happened. It says, there was an area called Nachal Arnon, the river of Arnon, which was really a wadi during the summer, meaning it was an area without any rain at all, without any water whatsoever. But in the winter, when the rain would come down the mountains, it would form a little river in between. There were two mountains, one on each side of each other, with a small little area in between where you could walk through. Not very wide, in fact, narrow enough that if you were standing on one side of the mountain, you could talk to a person on the other side of the mountain. That's how close these two mountains were to one another. Almost like cliffs that were just like that, and a little area in between. The Amorim, they plotted the area that the Jews were going to walk, and they saw that the way they were going, they were going to walk right in between these two mountains. And it would make sense for them to go through this area. There was mountains on one side, mountains on the other side. In order for the Jews to get by and eventually get to the Yarden, which the Jordan River, which they were going to go, it made sense that they were going to have to go through this area. So what did the Amorim do? They stood up and they went to those mountains. They went to each one of those mountains and they found caves. Caves on each side of this mountain. According to one parish of the Medrash, it seems that they dug out the holes themselves, but it seems that those holes were already there. There were caves inside there, and they hid inside the caves and talked to each other, waiting for the Jews to come by. With them, they had arrows, bows and arrows, obviously, huge rocks that they were going to throw down on top of the Jews as they came by, and their plan was to make it a massive bloodbath. Cut off one area from the mountains, cut off the other area of the mountains so that they couldn't run in or run out. And then they would have the high ground, start throwing things down. They were blocked from rocks that nobody would be able to shoot back up at them. And they would slowly but surely throw rocks down in the Jews until they would destroy them all, decimate the entire nation. That was their plan. Their plan was to do that and to completely destroy the people. But there was a miracle that happened. What they didn't know, what the Amorim didn't know, is that the Aron Kodesh traveled in front of Klal Yisrael while they were traveling through the Midbar. It was a length of 2,000 amos in front of the Anani Akavu, the clouds of glory, 2,000 amos in front. And when wherever the Aron went, it made the land easier to walk through for Bnei Yisrael. No mountains, it flattened all the mountains. No valleys, it brought up the land of the valleys. The Aron Kodesh made a path, so to speak, for Bnei Yisrael to go so that there would be no problems whatsoever. When it came to these mountains, says the Gemara, and there's a little bit of a difference between the Medrash Tanchuma and the Gemara says the two mountains collided with one another, they smashed each other, and every single hole on this side had a rock corresponding to it on that side, so that the Amorim, who were hiding in the caves, were completely crushed. Every single hole on this side that had a rock, it had a rock going that way, and they were completely crushed. The mountains came straight together and flattened to the earth, so that the Jews would be able to walk over it, and the Amorim were all killed. The entire army that was sitting and waiting in ambush, sitting on top of these mountains, their blood flowed into a river, and a massive river of, unfortunately, blood and guts came from that mountain and started flowing out through the rest of the desert where the Nachal Arnon normally would go. If it was the winter time and there was rain coming down, that's where the Nachal would go. That's exactly what happened here. According to Medrash Tanchuma, there were mountains in Eretz Yisrael that came to greet Eretz Yisrael that smashed down these mountains and knocked them out, crushing everybody that was in the mountain. The Jews had no idea. They didn't know there was an ambush in there. They had no idea that the people had been killed. They had no clue that something like this had happened. All they knew is they were walking in the clouds and that was that. Yeah. Now, so how did they find out? So the Gemara, Medrash Tanchuma says, the people saw the results. As they were sitting in the Anani HaKavod, they saw a river of blood and guts go by. And as they saw this river come by, they looked at each other and were like, what in the world is this? They went to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had a nevuah and said, this is what happened. And he told them what happened, that the Amorim are all dead, that they were inside the mountain, that they all died. That was one way that they found out. The other way they found out is from the Gemara. There were two Mitzorayim, two people that were Mitzoras, that had Saras. They were kicked out of the camp, because we all know that if you get Saras, you got to get kicked out of the camp. They were kicked out of the camp, and those two people were following behind the Anani HaKavod, where I guess the Erev Rav would have been, but the Erev Rav by this time were probably all gone. And the two Mitzorayim saw the results, not the people in the Nei HaKavod. They didn't see it at all. The two Mitzorayim saw it, and they ran to the camp, told the people inside the camp, and said, Bnei Yisrael, look at what just happened. The craziest thing in the world. You'll never believe it. Look at what just happened over here. And they all went to go see. They saw the miracle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they sang a song over what happened to Es Vahiv Bisufa. What happened by Es and Vahiv at the edge of the mountain, at the end of the Midbar, what they had seen over there. And that's the wording in our Pasuk. The wording of the Pasuk now is, Al-Kani Yomer B'Sefer Malchamot Hashem, we tell over in this Sefer, which is filled with the words of God, Es Vahiv, what Es and Hav saw, Bisufa. At the end of that mountain, the Esenacholim Arnon, and the river of Arnon that was filled with the blood of these Amorim, what they had seen in this area, and that's the Medrash itself. What an unbelievable Medrash. Targum Yonasan says a very similar thing. There's a little bit of a difference over there as well. It crushed the Jews' enemies, etc., but it's basically there. The Yavetz asks, wasn't everybody healed from their tzaras through Har Sinai? So how did these guys become Mitzoras? I don't even understand the question. It's Rav Yaakov Emden. So we're not talking about a slouch over here. We're talking about one of the greatest Gedolim of the 1600s, late 1600s, early 1700s. I don't even understand what the question is. I don't understand. Like, obviously, they spoke Lashon Hara and they got Tzaras. Like, I don't get why it's such a question. Like, how could these guys be Mitzorayim? Or the Egel Azav brought back all their diseases anyway. So anything they had and they lost at Har Sinai, it was brought back from the Egel Azav. I'm not so sure what he's asking over here. Here's the problem. Where do we ever find the word Es and Hav as a name? Es Vahav Bisufa, the word Es and Hav are really weird names. Where do those names come from? How do we get that? So listen to this. There's a Torah Tamima, Rav Baruch Epstein, that quotes Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Ches, where he says there's someone by the name of Es Be'ara. Her name, it's one of the wives of a certain person. Of Shacharayim is the name of the guy. One of the wives is Es Be'ara. Now he says it's possible that word Es is interchanging. There's two wives, Chushim and Be'ara, and Es is just dividing up between the two. But he says his opinion is that Es is the actual name. It's a female name, normally a female name. But then he says something different. Does anybody know what Levi's wife's name is? Levi's wife. It's Osa. Asher Yolda Osa Lo B'Mitzrayim. Is a pasuk in the Torah. Osa. Aleph Vav Saf Hey is the name of Levi's wife. If Osa is the name of Levi's wife, it's very shaykh that Es is the name of the Hebrew, the male counterpart. That would be the idea behind it. There also is the name Itai Hagiti. Does anybody know Navi well? Itai Hagiti? Do you recognize that name at all? Yeah, do you? Who is it? You have no clue. At least you remember it. Itai Hagiti is spelled Aleph Tav Yud. Itai Hagiti was a non-Jew, Itai. He was a general of a Giti army that joined David HaMelech when it's on his side when he fought against Avshalom. That's Itai Hagiti. He's mentioned a few times in Shmuel Beis. One of the times is prominent when he fights in the war against Avshalom. That's Itai Hagiti. That's once again a person like that. Hav is the daughter of a man named Aluka in Divrei Hayamim Aleph Perek Tes. So Hav is also a name. So it could very, very well be that Es and Hav are real names. They are actual names. So I give you permission. Your next kid, you can definitely name Es Vahav. Es Vahav is 100% a name. Seems to be okay. Hear this? It's good. Osa is still a female name. It's an okay name. It is mentioned in Tanakh, and therefore it would be a legitimate name to be able to use. Over here, these people had it. Okay, there are those that say that even in the Gemara, this refers to places. Es and Hav are not names. They're places, but the Eitz Yosef and the Ein Yaakov says he doesn't understand it at all. How in the world could these be places? It doesn't make any sense within the context of the Gemara. But nonetheless, the Marsha, the Malbim, and the Radak all say that the Gemara is referring to Es and Hav as places, not people, and that's that. Slach in Bracho says he thinks that the whole thing is strange. He says the Shita in this Gemara is Revi Eliezer. It's an awesome Slach in Brachos. It's also brought down by the Panini Yikarim. If you can find it, look at it, look for it. It's that Slach in that Gemara Brachos itself. But we're going to go on over here. The Orachaim HaKadosh says there's a hint in this Pasuk for something else. Nothing to do with the story. It's a hint to learning Torah B'chabrusa. Never learn Torah by yourself. Always have someone else there that you can bounce ideas off of. And you can say stories about this. The famous story, and I don't know if it's true, about the Brisker Rav, that the Brisker Rav knew there was one guy that was learning in his base medrash all the time. Right? You heard this story, right? And he was learning in the base medrash all the time by himself, and he had all these chidushei Torah. And after he passed away, they showed his chidushim to the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav took one look at it and said, it's nothing. It's garbage. Because the guy learned by himself the whole time. He didn't bounce his ideas off anyone else. The ideas were not the best ideas. Because when you bounce something off somebody, you can hear whether it's a good idea or not. When you're trying to say it on your own, it just isn't the best. It just, sometimes you come up with something, but it's just ridiculous because you're missing something obvious that your chavrusa or somebody else that you know really well will be able to take care of over here. The Gemara in Kiddushin, yeah. No, for sure, you're 100% right, meaning Perushim in the Torah. But what I mean is that when you're building yourself up to become someone who can write a Perush on the Chumash, you have to be learning the Chavrusa. So I'm saying the growth level, when you're still younger or you're still building yourself up, then you must learn Bechavrusa. When you're at the level where you're already giving shiurim, that's when you no longer need it, or somebody like that. I still need chavrusas, right? But people who are giving shiurim on a certain caliber, on a certain level, that's where it ends. But you're right. Up until a certain point, you need this. And at a certain point, you stop. That's when you start learning by yourself. When you're creating chidushim, though, you need someone to bounce it off, because your chidushim otherwise are going to be lost. They're going to be crazy. I look at some of the chidushim that I came up with, my first and second year in Eretz Yisrael. They're crazy. They're literally crazy. Like making up stuff from right and left. It's not so far away from what I do now, but it's still like a little less than that now. But it's just, you need somebody to bounce it off. Yeah. Yeah, when he was 100, 100%. Yeah, when you're 100, I give you permission all over here. When you are on the level of Rav Yashiv, then yes, 100%. But until he was 25, 30, whenever it was, he learned with a chavrusa. At some point, he said, I'm going to accomplish more by myself. And agreed, at some point that ends. But it's not at the age of 13, that I can guarantee you. At some point, it's going to change and that goes through. So the Gemara in Kiddushin on Lamed Beis says, the real war of God, the Sefer Melchamos Hashem, the real war that we're fighting against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, is the war to learn Torah properly. That's what the real war is. Even if two chavrusas are ripping into each other, they're fighting to the death about a certain pshat in the Gemara. I remember I had one chavrusa in the mirror. We learned all the way up by the Mizarfant. That's how far away in the main base matters. We used to fight like crazy, where I literally thought he was there's no one who was ever so wrong in his life. There's never been anyone like that. On the other hand, I was always right. And it worked out so well when he agreed with me, and it didn't work out so well when he didn't agree with me. And we would scream at each other all day long. At the end, we were good friends. Like, we finished the Seder. Seder was over. I look at him like, all right, so you're eating by me, or am I eating by you Friday night? What's happening? That's the way it's supposed to be. I mean, when it's coming to pshat in the Gemara, you have it. It's Mochamos Hashem. You have the Sefer. You have the Sefer open in front of you. There's Mochamos Hashem. But Es Vahev, there's Ahava Bisofa at the end of everything. That's the way to have a real chavrusa. If you're not coming out that way, if at the end of the chavrusa you're slamming your gemara down and you're saying, get out of here, I don't want to see you ever again, that's probably not the best chavrusa. That's not the right guy for you. That doesn't work out well in these types of situations. That's the idea. And then he goes on and he says, that's a nachal. That's a true inheritance of the Torah, where you're getting the Torah. Then it'll be so much easier for you. It's like a be'er that comes down. And he goes through all the rest of the psukim in this vein. The Gemara goes through, explaining the entire Gemara, that everything works out really well if you do this. Now, obviously, this is extremely confusing for anyone who does not understand the Gemara learning and Chavrusa system. To walk into the Mir Yeshiva and to see people trying to tear each other's throats out in order to figure out pshat in the Gemara, literally chairs being thrown, that doesn't make any sense to you. I think that's why the benches are impossible to be lifted up in the mirror, but it's just impossible to see. You don't get it. You're looking at it, you're like, I don't understand. All they see is a few Talmidei Chachamim who seem so refined in many other aspects, and then all of a sudden they love fighting and yelling at each other. Rabbi Kiva Eger says, it's a pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk says, in Memchaz Beis, Kinei Malachim Noadu, Avru Yachtov. The pasuk says, the kings are Noadu, they meet together. The kings, Man Malchi Rabbanan, says Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Who are kings? The rabbis. The rabbis are getting together to learn Avru Yachtov. The word Evra means anger. Getting together, they get angry at each other to figure out the pshat in the Gemara. Hey Marou, the people out there, they see it. Kain Tamahu. They wonder. They're like, what's going on over here? Who are these guys? Why are they fighting like this? They can't believe it. Nivhalu nechbazu. They're shocked. They're shaking. Achuzasim Shom, Ra'ada Achuzasim Shom. They're trembling, wondering, all the yelling and the screaming, what's going on over here? How does this happen over here? Don't make a mistake. Chil Kayoleda, says the end of the pasuk. It's just like a woman giving birth. A woman giving birth, a person who's pregnant, who's about to give birth, is screaming and yelling her head off. She might be yelling at her husband, stay away from me, get away from me. The Gemara says she's kofetzes v'nishbas. She jumps up and she swears she doesn't want to see her husband ever again because she's in so much pain she can't deal with it. Obviously, they didn't have all the drugs that they have nowadays. But the people are screaming in pain from everything that happened. They're screaming bloody murder, bloody murder. But after everything's said and done, she calms down, she gets the baby, and of course, the love comes back. Everything is back. It's as if it was never gone in the first place. That's what it's like. It's chil kayoleda. It's just like that type of situation. Maybe not as much pain, and I don't want to knock down anybody whose wives are pregnant right now, or anybody who is pregnant. That would be mean. This is not the same thing. But learning a sugya should be painful. It should be that you're sitting there and sweating, and sitting there and what in the world is going on here? You should be fighting it out. It should be chil kayoleda. And that's the truth when it comes to Talmid Chachamim as well. That as soon as it's over, as soon as you got shot in the sugya, then everything works out well. The Chassam Sofer in Dvarim says, in Drushos, I'm sorry, says that's the reason why it starts off the pasuk Al Kain. Yeah, Merrick. The word Kain means it is true. Kain means something that is MS. Al Kain, yeah, Merrick. The only time this happens well is if both of them are going into it trying to figure out the truth. If both of them are going into it trying to find the MS, both of them want to find the MS, then it works out well. The word Cain, Al Cain, if they're doing it in the right way, then it works out really, really well over here. The Ben Ishchai points out in Adaras Elio, the word behave, the next letters, after a vav comes a zayin, after a hey comes a vav, after a bays comes a gimel, zug. Es behave, the remez over here is that there's a zug, you have to have a pair of Talmid Chachamim learning together to come out with this idea for it to go through. We're going to end with this idea from Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab asks, why Chazal would have made a drasha that's so far away from pshat in the pasuk? The pasuk has nothing to do with learning Torah. The pasuk is not referring to both people trying to sit and learn Torah. It's talking about a story. There's a guy named S and a guy named Bahib who saw something crazy, or there's a war and all the different things that happen at war, like we've been saying up until now, that's pshat in the pasuk. Why in the world would Chazal say a drasha that seems so far away from the truth? And I think this is a great combination for it from Rav Schwab. We already said that what had happened, mountain and mountain, and the Amorim were hidden inside there was a little wadi in between, and what happened, guys? What happened? The mountains crushed each other, and every mountain that was right there was a hole, etc. Says Rav Schwab, that mountain was originally one big mountain. There was one massive mountain that was right there. There was an earthquake, and when that earthquake happened, the mountain split apart. But it split apart in the way where you could see it's literally two halves of one hole. Where every rock that was protruding here, there was a hole on that side. The Amorim didn't notice that. They just saw caves. So they went into the caves waiting for the Jews to come by and waited for that. But it was literally one big mountain that was split in half where a nachal came in between because of an earthquake that happened years ago that nobody was privy to, you know, to see. And they were part of it. They saw it and they went inside those little caves not realizing that if the mountain ever came back together, then what would happen? They would all be crushed. Because why would you think it would ever happen? That's a crazy thing to happen. Similarly, by Kriyas Yamsuf, what happened? The sea got up and split, right? A massive miracle was needed to hold it in place so that the Jews could go by. And then when the Egyptians walked in, right, when they were going in, what happened? Was there a miracle that the Yam Suf drowned them? Was it a miracle that the waters came down? No, right? Well, the miracle was that the waters stayed up. And then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away the miracle, what happened? The sea just came crushing down, crashing down, and destroyed all the Egyptians. Says Rav Schwab, says there was no new creation when the Yam Suf split and then came back. The Yam Suf splitting was a brand new thing and that was awesome. But the Yam Suf crushing them and drowning them, that was something that was normal, natural, and expected. That's what they expected. There was a miracle when the mountain split in half. That was a miracle. And Hashem held that miracle so that the mountain would stay that way for the Amorim to be fooled into going into it. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu released the Nes, and what happened in the mountain? Came crashing back, just like the Yam. Says Rav Schwab, it's the exact same thing when it comes to learning with Chavrusas. They're really two parts of one whole. One Chavrus is here, one Chavrus is there. There may be a chasm in between the two. A massive, massive river that's in between the two in which you cannot understand where the other guy's holding. There's one mountain here, one mountain there, one side of the sea here, one side of the sea there. It might seem that way. But all you need to do is to release something, get rid of something, then all of a sudden the mountain comes crashing back together and the Ava is back. It's not a miracle that they love each other after getting into those fights. It's a miracle that they even got into those fights. It's so to speak as if to say that the war of learning Torah, they always desire to come together. But Hashem was holding them back so they could come up with pshat. When they got the pshat, then immediately they came back together and everything worked out well. When you're going into learning with the right mindset, with a chavrusa, the result is it's automatic where you come crashing back almost like a magnet that finds its friend. And you come immediately back and there was no problem in the first place. It's as if there was never an issue in the first place. An unreal idea from Rav Schwab, in which he's looking and he's saying, that's the way it's supposed to be. And to end off, I'll just tell you, I think that's the obvious idea behind any marriage. They say that marriage is kasha kikriyas yamsuf. It's as hard as kriyas yamsuf. And I know they deal with zivugim. Kasha zivugim kikriyas yamsuf. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah mentions it, the Gemara in Sota, that it's kasha kikriyas yamsuf. Now, granted, yes, it is difficult. But if you look at yourself as two parts of one whole, now granted, there could be times where you're split. There could be times where there seems to be a split in between you and you cannot understand where the other person is. What is your wife talking about? What in the world is she saying? It's the exact opposite of what you would think is logical or normal. Right? It's the exact opposite. But if you look at yourself, in that way, then all you want is to get back together. To bring both sides of the mountain together, to bring both the Yamsuf to be normal again. And that's what it means. Kasha zivugin kikriyas Yamsuf. It's difficult at that time when things are going badly. It's kikriyas Yamsuf. It's like you're splitting the sea. The key is to bring it back together and to make it whole again. And when a marriage is like that, when a marriage has an idea where you're magnetized to each other, you feel like you want to get back together, then any fight doesn't become a chasm. It becomes smaller and smaller and smaller until finally becomes one. That's the concept. That's the idea of what you're supposed to get to. We should be zocha to all have that for ourselves. Guys, that's the end of Asvei Basuva. Have a great Shabbos.